Welcome to another episode of Big MX Radio. This is a complete breakdown of Red Bud National. Just in the rearview mirror, it was the 4th of July long weekend, which means that fans came out in droves. They were red, white, and blue, the entire crew. Like I said, I'm your host, Brad Gebhardt. With me on the line, Andrew Hopson, otherwise known as Hoppo. Hoppo, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm doing great today, Brad. Thank you very much. Definitely was a great race, and the 4th of July. I have been to this track personally. I've had wins and losses there. So, yeah, let's dive into it and see what we can find.
Fair enough. Were you with Honda in 2002 when RC went 24-0?
I was actually, yes, I was there. And the year before when we had just signed Ricky, he was still at Cowie.
Ooh, yes.
Tortelli led the moto and ran out of gas, and me and Shane Drew had to push the bike over the finish line.
Good old that Shane Drew.
That was a tough day. There's a long story behind how the tank shrunk. So,
One of these days I'm going to have you and Shane on, because I assume there's some stories. We'll just share some World War stories the entire time.
There's some 91 freeway stories there that we solved the problems of the world, let me tell you.
Oh yes, definitely. Well, when it comes to Drewski, that guy's got that guy can talk for miles. You can tell he drove a box van for quite some time.
For sure.
But so before we for those who are dedicated to listening to Big MX Radio, you've heard Hoppo on our Racer's Mindset podcast. You've heard him break down these races before, and we're just over halfway through the series. It's now an 11 round series because professional motocross doesn't like psychologically satisfying numbers like 15 supercrosses or 12 outdoors. But either way. It's a beautiful facility. I've been to Red Bud a number of times now. It's one of my favorite tracks, although it is not my favorite track. That one's coming up this weekend. Hoppo, let's just jump straight into the 250 class. Let's talk about, your first moto winner, none other than, Ty Masterpool. Like, this kid has kind of come out of nowhere. Obviously, he had a lot of fanfare and kind of notoriety, some buzz before he turned pro. Obviously, a lot of that due to the fact that he's kind of the whole family is sort of a lineage of professional motocross. His one oldest brother races in the pro class. He had a middle brother that actually ended up passing away during a crash at, I believe it was Lake Whitney, that would have been maybe 2011 or so. Ty Masterpool flying the flag for not only Pro Circuit, but the Masterpool family.
Oh, absolutely. And we spoke about him on our first call on the first round from Parler. And
that's right.
Like, you know, I think I remember saying, you know, give it to the guy. He had 4 or 5 days on the bike. And then we kind of called it. I mean, every race he has come back and produced. I read a little, I don't know if it was an Instagram snippet or somewhere, that, you know, basically it's just him against him. That's all he compares. And I thought that was a pretty cool quote with everything that goes on, that it's just him and him. And I think that's pretty cool. And it's a testament to where he is right now. He won a moto. I mean, he got lucky. I'm not going to say he got lucky. He won the race. Deegan was right there, kind of hot on his heels, but he won the race. That's all that matters. Everyone can say, it should have been another lap. It should have been that. But at the end of the day, the race was that length and he won it. Would have liked to have seen the second moto, probably a little higher, but I believe he was pretty spent after that and likely so after winning your first national.
Yeah, so, certainly. What actually surprised me in the second moto, Chance Hymus, who ends up taking the overall victory and the Moto 2 victory, is I expected him to fade a lot worse in the second moto than he did the first moto. I think he might have been experienced some arm pump or something to that effect, because right around the 15-minute mark of the first moto, Chance had himself about a 4 or 5 second lead, and that thing just evaporated, and he ended up getting relegated back to fourth place. Like it was actually surprising to see for a kid who usually has quite a bit of fitness. He might have the nickname Chunk, but I think that's more or less harkening back to his little stocky stature on 80s, not so much of his current fitness level. But yeah, first moto, like if there's one moto where you're gonna have less fitness, it's usually the first moto. But that wasn't the case for Hymus.
Yeah, I mean, that track was super rough, right? I mean, you've seen Hunter Lawrence crash.
That was scary.
Yeah, very, very scary. Yeah, so, with Hymus, I mean, he's definitely come along leaps and bounds this year. I think we touched on it in a couple of episodes before that sounds like the Honda guys have found a little more power, which is showing. But I did think that him and Shimoda, I could have been technique, could have been bike, not saying anything to anyone, but it looks like the other bikes or the other riders were faster through the sandwiches than those guys.
Yeah.
Whether the line on TV didn't quite show what led into it, but it seems like, you know, they were both past there and they both kind of looked slow through there compared to the others. But at the end of the day, he went 4-1 for an overall, which is, again, awesome. So, like I said, you can pick it apart to the cows come home, but kudos to the guys.
Yeah, certainly. And yeah, I think you're totally right. Like, it was kind of weird. Both Hondas, as they came out of that corner, it seemed that like both bikes sort of had a propensity to sort of like kind of just drift off to the either left or right. They had a hard time just like getting the power to the ground and moving forward, if that makes sense. Like more often than not, they were taking the inside line because they were trying to shorten the track up. But I don't know if they're lighting the tire up or if that's sort of a byproduct of using the scoop tire. I believe both guys were on the scoop tire right off the hop, so maybe they're just having a harder time like just putting the power down and moving forward. But Ty Masterpool's on the exact same tire, I'd imagine. And yeah, he ends up 1-5 for second overall. Of course, Hymus ends up with a 3-point penalty. Or a 5-point penalty due to jumping on a red cross, if I'm not mistaken. The funny thing is about the points is that the three front runners end up tied. It's a complete wash for the beginning of the day. Hymus with 38 points, along with Deegan and Vial. And I guess let's start off talking about Vial a little bit here. The 16, I would have sort of expected him to be closer to the front, if not running away with Southwick. And on a track like Red Bud, I actually expected him to do quite well as well. Only one of those motos on the podium. Kind of a very so-so day for Tom Vial.
Yeah, I mean, like, he led the race. He, you know, the rut where he crashed was kind of like a double hook, and I don't know whether he just lost concentration then lost the front, or the rut caught his foot and he lost balance that way. But either way, he lost the front in the double hook there, which cost him dearly. You're right. I think he'd be a lot further ahead. I think he would have been a guy that should have been where Hymus and Masterpole was right now, you know, battling for the first places.
Yeah, I thought that obviously with Hayden Deegan having I wouldn't say an off day, but obviously if you happen to go completely ass over tea kettle in the second moto, landed into a lapped rider's downed bike, it's actually a miracle he got up as quickly as he did and was able to remount and ended up, I believe it was fifth or sixth in sixth in the second moto. He goes 2-6 for fifth overall, outside the podium for the first time all season. He still has a massive points lead. I'm not good at visual math. That looks like it's damn close to 40 points. With Hymus in second place, I don't know how many people had Chance Hymus being second in points after six rounds on their bingo card, but... And especially being the top running Honda of the field so far, but here we are. We're after round six. Buchanan, Michigan, is in the rearview mirror, and Chance Hymus currently in second in points.
Yeah, I would never have picked. Never. I mean, you know, technically he was their B250 guy, right?
Well, yeah, he was a rookie last year. He has a national number for the fact that he raced a few supercrosses, and then. Did you race any nationals last year, or did you go to his knee fixed? I think he went and got his knee fixed.
He was hurt, wasn't he?
Yeah.
remember?
So, like, and he's, that means he's also racing a lot of these tracks for the first time. Like, maybe not Red Bud. He might have gone to a scouting compound there before. But dollars to donuts, I'm willing to bet Chance Hymus has never been to Millville.
Yeah, good question. He's from Idaho. Maybe.
That's quite the drive, but I have like crazier things have happened. You know, back in the day, guys would actually go to Minnesota or to District 23 to go qualify for Loretta's because it's a little bit softer as far as talents in the center of the country than it is out on the outskirts in like the southeast or the southwest. Those fields are always stacked. But yeah, just like looking at the results from this last weekend, I think that there's a lot of things that stick out to me on the 250 class, and I think the one that kind of is most glaring to me, and it is very puzzling, Levi Kitchen, sixth overall, like smash cut to like a month ago, if you had told me that like Levi Kitchen is going to be like a top five guy ish, like he'll be struggling to get top fives overall. I would have said you're crazy. Like this kid is like, he's well on his way to a Supercross championship. He narrowly missed that. And then, he ended up like, he looked so aggressive, so fluid, early in the season, racing at Paula at a track that he admittedly doesn't even love that track very much. Yeah, like I really thought that he would have done better at a place like, Red Bud, but, yeah, 6-3 on the day. Still ends up losing points to everybody in front of him in the championship.
Yeah, you're right, 100%. I mean, like, him and Masterpool have just done a big crossover of each other, right? One's going one way, one's going the other way.
Yeah. Yeah, they're now sitting side by each in points. And if not for that first round at Paula, Masterpool would probably be ahead of him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, totally true. Totally true. So I think, what do you think about Anstey on the Yamaha, 9-13, with ninth overall?
9-13, like, I think maybe expected a little more out of Max, although going to the 250 after racing in the 450 class outdoors more often than not, it is a little bit of an adjustment. Like, he has been riding the Yamaha for some time, but even still, like, just jumping in mid-season, it's kind of like jumping onto a treadmill, like the things in a full flat out sprint. Racing with the kids, like, I'm not saying he's an old man by any means, but I think he's my age, if not a little bit younger. So that's probably not playing in his favor. And just the fact that, yeah, he only has a couple of races on the bike, but ninth overall, like, I that's nothing to sneeze at. I think if he had maybe some better starts in both motos, maybe he's able to catch the pace. Like, he was kind of like, I wouldn't say mid pack, but like both motos after the first lap, he's 12th and 11th respectively. So like, you're kind of in the middle of everyone there. So it's tough to move forward. It's like, and whatnot, but, like, what were your thoughts?
I mean, it's kind of, you know, that whole deal, come about quick. So, you know, I think you only really had a week or two to really prepare. And then you could say the same thing, you know, with, Masterpool as well, right? You know, will we see him get better as there's more seat time? You'd like to hope so. You know, 9-13 is still pretty good for your first national of the year, really. So, yeah, I think that I think we'll see more things out of Max once he gets more time under the seat.
Well, certainly, and like if you look at the area that he's in, there's not a single one of those guys from 7 through 14 who don't believe that they should be at the front edge of that group. Like Casey Cochran, DeFrancisco, Anstey, Finnis, Bennick, Reynolds. Actually, Romano, 13th is an improvement based off of how he's been doing recently. He's had some struggles, but like Schwartz is fast, Jalik Swole is fast, Jordan Smith, if not for a first moto crash, he might be up there. Pierce Brown, 17th overall. Like, these are all guys who, for all intents and purposes, believe they should, they like, you got probably 10 guys in that cluster right there who all feel like they should be a top 10 guy. At the end of the race, something's got to give, like whether it's a bad start, a mid-race crash, or what have you, that ends up getting the tail of the tape. But like I said, there's probably 8 guys right in the middle of the meat of the top 20 who all believe they should be a top 10 guy.
Yeah, what happened with Joey Savacci, 36 DNF?
36 DNF, I think that was an electrical issue in the first moto, and then I don't know that he started the second moto. I'd have to see the lap chart.
No, it says did not start.
Okay, so yeah, I think that from my understanding, it wasn't a physical ailment. It was a bike issue with the Triumph, and it's kind of gone from bad to worse with Joey. I don't think that's by any fault of his own, which I think is sort of that sort of stems his sort of frustration that he's felt so far this season. He can't really catch a break. I know Swole has also had some bike issues. So I don't really know what to make of it. I don't know enough about the situation under the tent there, but the 17 machine not able to finish races for a guy who, rolling into the season, had aspirations of podiums and race wins and contending for this championship. He's currently outside the top 10 points. That's got to be a tough pill to swallow for Savacci.
Right. When you look at, you look at Evan Ferry with the 21-20 on a privateer Gas that was on the team.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I really like to see that they get everything together and everyone races. That's what you want to see.
Yeah, certainly.
You don't want to see DNFs.
No, you don't want to see guys not being able to finish races. And in that same breath, points in both motos for the first time in Evan Ferry's career. And it's been literally, and he, I think he's used this euphemism more than a couple of times on his Instagram, is just building it brick by brick. Evan has dealt with injuries and expectations and hype and internet, what have you, about the tail end of his amateur career, and then his time spent on Triumph. I know there's lots of people sort of slinging some arrows about whether or not he should have left that situation. Regardless of how it happened or what happened, he ended up moving on, and he ended up getting some support from the Wildcat Racing team. He's on a familiar platform because he had been riding a Gas in a couple of races years prior. Like this time last year when he was at Loretta's, he was on a Gas. Although it was kind of like a bike with no sort of affiliation, because he was at that time already contracted and working with Triumph. Of course, they couldn't show off the bike yet, but and that must have been very trying for him, is basically to be riding a Triumph to try and develop this thing and training on it and this, that, and the other thing, and learning about that motorcycle while also trying to go a lot faster just as fast on a Gas, which at that time I'm sure he would have been getting no support from that OEM, because obviously if you're contracted for Triumph, KTM / like Gas Husky is not sending you any bikes and parts to kind of keep that program running. So a lot of things have sort of been up in the air for Evan, and I'm glad to see that he's sort of starting to move things back in the direction of getting points every race and heading to a place like Millville, which I got to imagine would be right in his wheelhouse as far as tracks that he'd enjoy. I think there's not too many people who roll into Millville with a sour attitude, unless they look at the temperature next weekend. It should be in the low 90s.
Yeah. Well, again, you look, he's 23rd overall, 21-20, and then you look at the list of guys that we've just named in front of him.
That's right.
I mean, he's really, there might be two or three privateers in front of him. Everyone else is a factory supported guy. So, at the end of the day, that's where you kind of think that a true privateer would sit. Because once you get to, Jordan Smith, Pierce Brown, Callum Hawkins, Tom Guyon, Lux Turner, Jake Cannon, Crockett Myers, I mean, you're a full privateer right there.
Oh, no, you totally are. So, And I'm actually interested in having Evan on the podcast. I maybe should text him about having coming on next week after Millville. I'm really curious as to his perspective of, and like, this is maybe something that his dad can probably chime in on as well, because he found himself in the privateer pits at some point, going to the races and having the rig, and you've got your spot where you can get changed, and you're not setting up awnings or tents, or like, he is full on privateering it over there. They are some 10x10 easy ups and lawn chairs, and like, it's as privateer an effort as you can imagine. I wonder if that gives the young man a little bit of perspective when he does. In fact, I'm sure Evan Ferry will one day get an opportunity on. It might not be overnight as far as getting another factory opportunity with like a Husqvarna or a KTM or GasGas or one of the Japanese manufacturers. But if, say, he ends up on a Rock River Yamaha, or ends up on a Club MX Yamaha, something along those lines, that he doesn't end up like maybe being a little bit more like, just have that perspective of like, wow, like the guys, the privateers, like, they are really up against it. And that can maybe put a little bit of wind in the sails. Not to say that he was ever ungrateful for the situation that he was in before. But like, going through a summer like this, I think that does nothing but sort of toughen up a guy like Evan Ferry and give him a little bit of maybe a little gut check. Like, hey, things could be worse.
Well, that's it. I mean, he's lucky he's out there. He's, you know, I'm sure he's, like you said, very grateful for what he has and right, being able to do that. But, you know, for him, I think now for the next step, like you said, you know, brick after brick, because he's going to have to find, you know, basically 10 spots to get into that next level, right? You're sitting in 23rd for the day. You really need to be into that top 15, in the top 10 constantly for that next chance or availability to pop up.
Certainly. And yeah, like, also a huge shout out to Bakersfield, California's own Jet Reynolds, a kid that when you were at Pro, like working at Pro Circuit, were you at Pro Circuit at all when like Jet was on Super Minis and stuff like that?
No,
you were, that's way after your time.
I mean, I was kind of in and out, like, you know, I still helped Mitch with the pipes, obviously, here and there, but I mean, yeah, he was in and out of there at that time, but I've never worked. I think I've met him a few times, but he's come a long way. He's had some adversity. He's had to turn some things around. So, and that's, you know, 11 for 12th overall. That's pretty good. That's where I would expect him to be at the moment.
Certainly, yeah. Now he's running the number 99, which as a hockey fan, you know, I'm a big fan of that. Completely off topic, and before we get to the 450 class, this is how I'll segue it, is like, you would have actually died laughing listening to me and my buddy James after we had left Pro Circuit, when I picked up the KTM from you, and of course, I got to meet Schneike for the very first time. He's a guy who's been in the industry for decades. But like, and I didn't mention it at the time, but I did think think of it as a little bit peculiar that, I think was it a Super Mini or an 85 that was on the dyno?
I would have been a Super Mini.
Okay. So, and I realized that it's got a Pro Circuit, cylinder on there and a Pro Circuit pipe silencer on there. That engine has seen basically no upgrades over the last at least 10 years, if not more. What are the horsepower?
I don't really know. I mean, it's comparable. You know, I can tell you this.
Yeah.
That KX 85, 112, whatever you want to call them these days, the 85, the 112, is the most dynoed bike ever.
That's what I'm saying. Are they search, like, how many are you searching for a tenth of a horsepower at that point?
Like, pretty much.
We were kind of just chuckling to ourselves. I'm like, what do you venture to find in a situation where, like, there's, it's like, yeah, who are we kidding here? Like, we're gonna find a quarter of a horsepower at 10,000 RPM on a KX Super Mini. Like, that thing, she's pretty tired. Like,
yeah. I mean, but that's just, I mean, that, I mean, to Mitch, it's I think nowadays, I mean, he just loves it.
And yeah.
But it's more of a hobby, I think, and a testament that he just wants to keep going on it and keep it alive. I mean, I've seen some pretty off the wall stuff. You know, he talks to people all around the world, you know, go-kart guys or old road race guys or whatever. And then he'll just wake up and go, oh, let's try this, you know, or whatever it is, you know, and that's kind of how he operates on that stuff.
Right.
We tried a handful of pipes there for a while and we couldn't really beat anything that they had. So yeah, I mean, I think that he's just old school at heart and he loves it. And I don't know. I'm the same too. I walk in there and go, how many more cylinders can you grow? And like, you've already ground 3,000.
Yeah.
Right. But every time it's, like I said, it's the most dynoed bike ever in that building.
No, it has to be. Yeah, he must be doing something right because the KX Super Minis are often at the front of the pack. We'll see if Carson Wood can do exactly that in a couple weeks' time at Loretta Lynn's. And Mitch must have at the very least been smiling ear to ear when he, at the scouting combine, he goes 1, 2, and 3 with Christian Janik, Drew Adams, and Landon Gordon, who I had to feel for Landon Gordon because he literally like led the entire thing up into about, oh, I don't know, about 60 feet until he honestly it looked like it might as well have been me on the seat as he just sort of augers himself in late in the race there. Like he must have been a pretty tired puppy dog coming to the final corner there to kind of lose it all right there. That's going to sting.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it always does, right? But I think that, again, you know, the testament to Cowie, PC, and Mitch and, you know, keeping that Team Green dream alive, right?
Yeah,
so absolutely. And they have supported it for so long and so well. And that's, you know, that's just part of the motocross history, really.
Yes, sir. So moving over to the 450 class, you've got it was big news. We didn't do a reaction podcast to it. It was a little bit late last week. But Jet Lawrence is not going to be part of the outdoor series. He will not be able to defend that championship. And I, for one, am really disappointed that we're not going to be able to get to see him continue to compete, and I really think that he brings the best out of every single one of his competitors by just being that next level talent that they have to chase. But I think this is almost shades of 2007 when Ricky Carmichael hung up the boots after Millville and James Stewart had a knee issue and the rest of the guys were looking at each other saying, none of us have ever won a 450 championship. Someone's going to have to go do it. 2007, it was Grant Langston. And this year, it very well could be Chase Sexton. He goes 1-1 on the day at a racetrack that he's probably... I can't even venture to guess how many times he went there for or Loretta Lynn's regional qualifier. He's got a lot of laps at a place like Red Bud. But what did you see from these guys, man? It was quite the race. Chase goes 1-1, but it wasn't that simple for him.
No, I mean, Hunter Lawrence led it, right, all the way until he made a mistake. Let the hand come off the bars, and like you said, whether they're running the scoop tires or not, I'm not privy to that information. But, you know, again, I think that it's like what you touched on with Ricky and Bubba, where, you know, it's kind of like that rainforest scenario, right? The biggest tree falls down, and then the sun falls down on everything else underneath, and then everything else grows. And, you know, Chase seen that. And I've said it before, it's like I said to the KTM guys, it's like, you know, Chase really at the end of the day was the one that had the hardest transition from last year because they added the 3 extra races.
Right.
You know, he really had 8 weeks to rest, recover physically, mentally, spiritually, whatever you want to say, get on a bike, develop it, and defend a championship. It was like 8 to 9 weeks from the last race. And for him, that's a big challenge. And for the team, it was a big challenge. So, and I think that he's progressively gotten better throughout the year. Would he have beaten Jet on the weekend? I don't know. It's hard to say. We'll never know. But anyway, he went 1-1. And he rode really, really well. I think I did see a different Chase this weekend. Now, whether the pressure had gone, and it was open. It's all up to him now. I don't know, but I thought he definitely rode good. I think that was probably the best I'd ever seen him ride.
Better than Hangtown when he went from last to first.
Yeah, because he backed it up two motos.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, exactly. You're right on that. Scary crash for Hunter Lawrence in the second moto. Obviously, it was at the point in the moto where he was still able to finish in the second place spot. He must have been hurting though to finish that off. He gets a little bit, I guess, kind of like the front wheel sort of starts to push, and then from there, like that. The funny thing is the TV does not do justice how steep and how short that section is as it sort of like hooks back towards the other side of the track. That is a very sketchy spot. And if your wheel happens to go the wrong way, well, you saw what happens. Hunter Lawrence ends up taking a serious soil sample. He's lucky to be able to get up and remount and charge back forward. Ends up second or third on the day, tied on points with Plessinger.
I mean, he's very lucky he didn't break anything.
Like, right.
You know, the bike swapped, the hand come off the bars, then it leveraged the bars the other way. He kind of got his hand back on the bar, but it was too late then. The force of momentum going down the hill had already overtaken. So he hit the ground pretty hard. And he did get up and he got going again, and he still finished second. You know, those guys had a fair lead on the rest of the field, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how, like the way a professional motocross race works, like 35 minutes, once, like, say the second place or the third place guy loses touch of the leaders, like, he's still got a superior pace to the guys behind him. But as long as you're ahead of the fourth place guy, or you're still putting time on the fourth place guy, sometimes third can be as much as, like, 45 seconds back. While the other two just like they're on another planet, they're still moving forward and doing their whole thing. So, it's always pretty wild to see like that. Like when you try to explain supercross or motocross to somebody, like these guys literally go all out. They're as close to the edge as they can possibly be. Oh, and by the way, they do it for damn near 40 minutes straight. It's not a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's actually both. And oh, by the way, you're gonna have to wrestle a 200-pound motorcycle all at the very same time while basically playing drums because you're using hands, feet, everything else in between. I don't know a sport more involved than motocross.
No, for sure. And you know, I think if you go back to Moto2 and watch Anderson around the outside coming down the same spot where Lawrence crashed, I mean, he nearly had the same thing happen. The back end started to step out, and he had just caught it. Else, it could have spelt some, first lap carnage for him. But he actually pulled it off.
Yeah, and like second moto, always surprised. Just like Jason Anderson will just randomly have extremely strong motos. Like, I don't know how many people had a podium moto from Jason Anderson on their bingo card, but there it is for a guy who actually never won a 250 overall during his 250 career. I think he only has three or four, if even that many, 450 outdoor wins. But yeah, third place at a place like Redbud, that's nothing to sneeze at whatsoever. Justin Cooper rounds out your top five. Kind of a quiet day for Cooper. I honestly expected more. I know Redbud's a track that he likes. So surprised to see and he had good starts too. It's not like he had bad starts and was sort of mired in the back and moved forward. He was fourth and sixth respectively off of the starts and basically stayed there. He ended up he gained one position in the first moto one position in the first moto, gained no positions in the second moto, just stayed right where he's at.
Yeah, it's I was a bit surprised to see how far he was off the leaders actually. I mean, I think you're talking like 20, 30 seconds by the time they finished. So, I mean, that again, you can look at that in a couple of different ways. It's like, well, the first two guys are just killing it. Maybe he did have a bad day. It was like, oh, these guys really need to step it up again. Like, you know, you shouldn't be getting beat by 30, 40 seconds. So, like I said, you can break that down several ways.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny because Justin Cooper is probably like going back to his locker in the Yamaha rig and throwing shit around, being like, what the hell, with a fifth. But Malcolm Stewart might be doing backflips with a sixth. Like, it's all perspective, right?
Even Marchbanks on his seventh or 7/8 on a, you know, I'm not going to say privateer team, but factory supported to some level.
And he's still coming off injury. There's no way he's 100%.
No. And again, we can go down to Christian Craig. He's still somewhat on a recovery train.
Two Husqvarnas in the top 10. We haven't seen that in a while.
No, no. I mean, Ferrandis, he got unlucky in the first moto with the crash. Two lines come together.
Yeah. Realistically, he was lucky to get points at all, actually.
Yeah. Realistically, when you look at the second moto, fifth, you could have probably said that, you know, 4, 5, 6 in the first moto should have given him around a fifth or a sixth overall. But
we got a race the races. Brock Tickle returns for the first time in like 4 years. He running that his first number that he ever raced as a professional, 938. You don't see too many 3-digit numbers under the factory rig nowadays, but there it was. I guess there was two. But Kyle Webster's riding for Firepower Honda, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yes. Do you know Kyle Webster at all?
No, I do not. As I was coming back in 16, he was starting to come on the scene. I know he had some crashes and he had to, again, overcome some adversity and, build himself back up. I mean, obviously, Yariv gave him the opportunity to ride there on the weekend. 10-9, he led the second moto. I think he probably really got a sense of how fast those guys were and how long they can go for so fast. I think speed is one thing, but to be able to hold that speed for the time, obviously, as we just spoke about with Cooper and those guys, that, you know, the guys on top are really laying it down. And, you know, that's obviously, that was the experience that he needed, and hopefully he can build on that. I mean, that's going to take a long time, right? That's just not something that happens overnight. That's a year or two of continuous work.
No, certainly. And it's an international top 10. We have a couple of Australians in there. We've had an Estonian, probably should have had another Frenchman. It's probably like they're it's got a diverse in fact, you had two Swedish racers in the field. Like, yeah, it's they're all over the place. I still kind of get over Scotty Verhage, which is like the most non-French name I've ever seen in my entire life, from Paris, France. That's got to be some sort of a typo. Although it's
22.
Yeah. A Japanese racer in the 450 class. That Yoko Sawa.
If I had to guess, he's probably Japan national.
Yes.
Racer, and he's doing a handful of races out of the Honda truck, I would say.
We've seen that episode before. Were you ever with were you with Factory Honda when Akira Narita would come over?
Yes.
Is he not hilarious?
In the early 2000. Yeah.
He's interesting guy. He is an interesting guy. Yes.
You don't hear too much of him anymore.
No, but he's also well into his 40s.
True.
But yeah, actually, so it looks like Takumu Yokosua is a Factory Honda guy, and he's he's an Alpine Stars athlete. Although I've also seen him wearing canvas gear in some of these photos. Looks like he's not a super young guy. Looks like he's been around for quite some time. Or at least some of the photos, like you got some, that's at least 2018. So he's been on Honda's for a while and, he does his thing. Like, good to see him over here, like an international field. The 450 class was absolutely stocked full of it. I think this last weekend was a step in the right direction for Harlan. Certainly a step in the right direction for Craig. I maybe didn't say on record, but based on what I know about his elbow, I would think I would have been surprised to see him in the top 10 this year. Although he did have some hardware removed, which is a good thing because you're having hardware removed. At the same time, that's still technically a surgical procedure. So, like, I don't know if that helps or hurts your finishes in the short term. But it was good to see. And like I said, in the 250 class, like, you got guys like Shane McElrath thinks he should be a top 10 guy. Philip Nicoletti thinks he should be a top 10 guy. Marshall Welton thinks he should be a top 10 guy. Brock Tickle more than likely thinks he should be in the top 10. Same thing with Dylan Ferrandis. And if not for a first moto that was butt ugly, he probably would have been. Like, it's we talk about it on all these podcasts, but like, there's 20 guys who think they should be like within swinging distance of the top 10. Unfortunately, there's not 20 spots in the top 10 right now. We're trying to figure out how we can math that, like, kind of divide the spots somehow and fit more guys in there. But until then, something's got to give. And like, if you're Shane McElrath, 16th overall, you're not happy about that. And I have a sneaking suspicion he's probably going to have some company under the tent this weekend in Millville.
Yep. I mean, we'll go back to Kyle Webster.
Sure.
I mean, first time on the track, a 10.9. He was 8th overall on the day. So that's your first U.S. national, and you're inside the top 10.
Yep.
That's a pretty good effort. And then the guy who was 9th is Harry Koulis from Estonia, 9.12. I would assume he's a KTM privateer guy. He might have some help somewhere on the line. So you've got some privateers from around the world. I'm not saying Webster's a privateer. But, you know, he obviously rides on the Honda Australia team. But again, first race in the US, first national, he led it. He had a good start. He did get tied, but that was always going to happen. You're in front of some pretty stocked guys.
Yeah, no, there's talent all the way through this. And like I always say, if you look at the results and you sometimes look at the time qualifying, let's just go into the 450 qualifying here. There was 89 riders that showed up. I don't like to go to the last one because that's usually a bad example. But Ryan Lachine, 87th overall in times, his fastest lap time was 2:37. That's the fastest one that got recorded. I believe that's 450 class, so that would have been the last qualifying. Chase Sexton is running almost a 2 flat. So when Ryan Lachine shows up to a race, he's 33 seconds a lap off of Chase Sexton's best time. But I'll tell you this about Ryan Lachine. If that guy shows up at your local race, your local track, watch the fuck out. Like, I don't know much about Ryan Lachine. I'm just reading his name and knowing that he's on a Yamaha. He's 33 seconds back on Chase Sexton's fastest lap. I don't think I could. I'm sure. I know this for a fact. I would not be able to hang on to Ryan Lachine for more than a couple of corners.
Right.
Like,
well, I mean,
that's how good these guys are.
Right. I mean, you can go Jerry Robin with a 39 DNS.
Right. He messed up his shoulder. He'll be out for a while.
Oh, really? Poor guy.
Oh, yeah. He's not doing good.
So, Wow.
But it's wild. Like, seriously, like, okay, like, first, I'll give you a perfect example. And I know he raced at Connor Lords. Connor Lords out of Utah. I've seen that kid race in Utah at Mesquite. He's well within the top five at the pro class at a local race in the RMX series. 71st overall in times. He's running 2:30 in qualifying. Both his sessions were almost the exact same lap time. So that's a lap from Connor Lords. I don't think that guy blew my doors off when I was at Mesquite. Like, that, I could barely see the guy. And
right.
And that's not even making the motos. Same thing with Gavin Bruff. Like, unbelievable talent out of Utah. He lives in Mesquite, Nevada as well. And 47th in times. I don't know what he ended up getting in the LCQ. But like, the the number of guys who have unbelievable amounts of talent. And that's why they sign up for these races. It's not just to like, oh, I got my pro card and I'm going to go line up for a race, because it's not cheap whatsoever. These guys all have the skills to pay the bills. And in some way, shape, or form, they're going out there and they're being professional motocross racers. I was surprised to see Matty Jorgensen as far out as he was in time qualifying. I think he saw him in the moto, so he must have either won or did well in the LCQ. But yeah, I can't drive it home hard enough. Like the guys at the front of the pack, they're a special breed. They're a cut above. But anybody who signs up and lines up for qualifying in an AMA national is a bad dude.
Oh, for sure, absolutely. I mean, I was never that gifted, right? So I'm always
no. We're
guys that yeah. Anyone that pays the money shows up and completes a timed practice is a hero in my book.
Yeah, no, they've got my vote.
Yeah, and I mean, you just got to look how rough the tracks are.
Mm-hmm. And how deep they are,
and the speed that you've got to navigate and keep that bike upright without running out of talent.
Exactly. What's crazy to me is, yeah, like if someone might come watch me ride, they'll be like, if they've never seen motocross before, if I'm the only one there, they're like, man, you're pretty good at this. And I was like, no, I'm not. But to them, I am, because it's like they've never even tried it. They couldn't even like roll the slide the clutch out slowly enough to take off in a straight line. And then these guys are putting 30, 40 seconds into me per lap, coming around to get me in four laps. It's next level. I'm looking forward to seeing it in Millville this weekend. Final thoughts on the 450 class. Give me some other things that sort of stuck out to you before I let you go here on the Big MX Radio podcast.
Brock Tickle, 12:15. I mean, I know he's a test rider. He rides a lot, but 2020, did you say, or 2022 was his last race?
2020. It's been 4 years.
I'd be curious. So I'd like to go back and see what his last finish was. Did he finish inside the top 10 or the top 15 4 years ago?
I will check that right now. Continue talking. Brock Tickle. And then Brock actually had a very interesting and unceremonious sort of move into the 450 class. If you remember, he won the Supercross title in, I believe that was 2011, and
right,
he didn't
have pointed it out.
Yeah, he kind of pointed out he couldn't go back and defend his title, and that actually forced Mitch to have to actually go and race and like basically put together a 450 program for him. If I'm not mistaken, it was actually the owner of Traxxas. Those who remember, Traxxas was a huge sponsor of was Mitch's team for quite some time there. It actually allowed him to sort of also go racing for a short bit with was it Justin Bogle or someone else was or maybe it was Tyler Rattray for a very short period of time.
Rattray.
Yeah, there was a little bit there. But yeah, last 450 outdoor that he did, they were on Yamahas. I do not remember that. I do not remember Brock Tickle on a Yamaha at the tail end of 2020. Interesting.
Was it JGR?
Perhaps. No, JGR wouldn't have been Yamaha at the time, were they? I thought they were Suzuki at the very end. What is that? I have to look now. I have to look up Brock Tickle 2020, but he got ninth.
Okay.
And, but the ones prior to that, he was 18th and 19th. So honestly,
he's kind of about where he left off.
Yeah. Brock Tickle 2020. He is on a star. That's right. He filled in at Star Racing Yamaha. Remember that?
That's right.
Yep. He went there, and yeah, actually it was Travis Soles that was his mechanic. That must have been sort of he pulled a guy over from his time at Star at JGR, and JGR did not race outdoors that year, I don't think. if I'm remembering correctly. And then yeah, Tickle ended up finishing the year on Star Racing Yamaha. They let him wear FXR rather than switching to Thor for a few weeks. But yeah, that was I remember that. I honestly don't even really remember much of Brock Tickle's return to racing after his suspension. But yeah, he had one season with Moto Concepts, and then he also raced with JGR for a short bit before finishing things off with Yamaha. Yeah, it's wild to see. Did you see Thor has a new logo?
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, like the I can't remember the name of the movie.
Thor.
Yeah, no, I can't remember.
Honestly, it actually reminds me of like a fitness brand, though. Is it like kind of like something nutrition? I can't remember what it was. There's like a, is it Rogue Nutrition or like?
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Anyway, this is great audio. But this has been fun. Always a pleasure to break things down. We are going to reconvene for a Racer's Mindset podcast. Looks like our guest is unavailable on Thursday, so we will be recording that next week. But we got a couple episodes in the hopper anyway, so we'll slide some things around. But Hoppo, before I let you go on the podcast, where can people find you? Where can people follow along? And if I'm not mistaken, you do have a website that's starting to
website. It's called hoppofit.com. You can find me there and ask any questions and look for some content and catch up on racing, or if you want to race and want to be better at racing, I can help you there. I'm about to change my Instagram at the moment, but it's still just Hoppo for this point at the time. But just on passing, I'll bring up one little piece of information going back to Brock Tickle. The reason I asked where he finished in the last round was in the late 90s when I worked for PC, we helped Bradshaw at the Manchester Honda race.
Really?
You remember that?
Yeah, I remember Manchester Honda, yeah.
Yeah, we did some pipes and that for him. And then anyway, he was in the shop one day and Bradshaw, he was like, how's it being back? He goes, I remember racing way fucking harder with Stanton than those guys, and these guys are racing now.
Really?
So I was curious. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was like, nah, these guys aren't fast.
Interesting. Well, those late 90s Hondas, they didn't leave... They let those bikes left you wanting a little bit.
Yeah, I had a 98 CR250 at PC, and I was at Coin Hell on breaking it in for Kehoe to ride, and the steel handlebars broke on me going down the main straight.
Nice.
I had a little nap in the track, and the next year they come with rentals.
There you go. Then you, there you go. Like, there's a Scorpion song about that. Something about the winds of change.
All right. We'll leave it there.
All right. Sounds good, my friend. You have yourself a great rest of your day.
You. Thank you.
All right. Bye.